Okay, this hour we'll take your phone calls with Mr. Lobo. Questions about horror films, and also let us know about your own local host. Is he or she still around? And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Mr. Lobo with us. I'll tell you, Mr. Lobo, a funny story about Patrick Wilson, who was in Insidious, The Conjuring, and a number of other films. Back in 1979, I'm a television news director in St. Louis, and my anchor person was a fellow by the name of John Wilson. He had a little six-year-old boy who ended up being Patrick Wilson.
Oh, wow.
Is that a That's small incredible. World?
That is incredible.
And he moved off to Florida with his parents. His mother is a voice teacher, Mary Kay, and the father was a television anchorman. It's cool, huh?
Incredible. You know, a lot of these television personalities, the anchormen and stuff, a lot of them ended up being horror hosts. You know, Bob Wilkins was the weatherman, and he was my horror host. He was the weatherman on Channel 2, and he was the horror host.
Richard writes me from Canton, Ohio. He said, I used to watch a fellow by the name of Gugliardi.
Aya Gugliardi, yes.
And
Ernie Anderson.
Yep, that's right. Exactly.
Most famously known as the voice of ABC, the Love Boat.
That was him?
Mm-hmm.
How about that? He would green screen himself into some of these old black and white films.
Yes.
And this guy here says he made it even funnier than the original movie.
Yes, there's a famous one, and I'm not sure if it was him or Zachary, but he's leaning on a building, and then the scene changes, and he's leaning on the 50-foot woman by mistake.
I love it. All right, let's take some calls here. We've got calls this hour with Mr. Lobo. Eugene Logan is with us in Eugene, Oregon. Here we go. Hi, Logan. Well, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hi there.
How are you guys doing tonight?
Great.
So I wanted to bring up the influence on music in horror movies, such as punk rock bands like The Misfits and subgenres of music like psychobilly.
Sure, The Cramps.
I love The Cramps and The Meteors and all that stuff.
Absolutely, you know, definitely. And there's a whole offshoot where it's all horror, where there's a horror punk offshoot of that kind of music. I worked actually on a movie called The Ranger this year, which was a punk movie about a bunch of punk rockers getting killed by a park ranger. And you know, there's definitely always that connection between music and movies, and I think they influence each other. I think Return of the Living Dead is probably the ultimate punk rock horror movie.
We didn't talk about slasher movies like Chainsaw and things like that.
We didn't talk about Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which is interesting if you watch that film, because really there's hardly any blood in it. There's hardly any, I don't think there's any even harsh language in that movie, but it's so disturbing that you think you see and you think you hear a lot more than you actually do.
Well, that's true. It makes you really want. It's like Psycho.
Yes, Psycho, exactly. Psycho has Psycho in its time had the same heavy rep that Chainsaw Massacre
You
had.
Never saw the knife stabbed into
no.
the woman in the shower?
Never entered her.
But you thought you
we
did.
We all felt it.
You exactly. Next up, Nancy in Victoria, Texas. Welcome to the program. Hi, Nance.
Hi.
Hey. Good to have you with us. Go ahead.
Thank you. First off, I got to say this. The last movie that I watched recently was the 2018 version of Halloween.
Ah, okay.
Yep.
Did you like it?
Yes.
I did, too. I enjoyed it.
So I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
What's Mr. Lobo's take on the newer movies that are out right now, such as Get Out and other scary movies that are subliminally or a little bit political in a way?
Yes, well, that's been going on for a little while now. I think the Purge films, there's Get Out, and I understand like what you're saying with those films in particular. I think the guy from Key and Peele, which I always forget if he's Key or if he's Peele, but he's rebooting the Twilight Zone as the host. You know, I mean, I think that horror films always sort of do reflect the times and always do kind of have underlying political. I mean, all the 50s horror movies, we thought that Reds were hiding under our basements or whatever. So I think it's just an ongoing thing of whatever people are afraid of. And right now, people are afraid of politics, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. What about the Walking Dead series? They, you know, seem to have a life of its own.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's interesting because it is kind of still following the Night of the Living Dead kind of template. I think it's because we're interested in the characters and the stories. And to be honest, you're talking about where the Western went. I think that a lot of Western stories have all been converted into zombie stories. You know, it's instead of shooting at Indians, they're shooting at zombies.
What made the horror genre so popular in its day?
Well, you know, there's definitely a lot of cycles. I think the first cycle was the 30s with Dracula and Frankenstein, and that's because Universal had a very young president, he wanted to see more horror content, and they made it. And, you know, then things got conservative for a while, and the cycle didn't come back until the later 40s with the Wolfman. And then it got kind of conservative again for a while, and then in the 60s, when trying to compete with television, the movies got rougher and scarier, leading up into the 70s with films like The Exorcist and so on, where you're not going to see that on TV, at least not uncut. So, you know, I think that there's definitely cycles with horror films, and I think we're in another horror cycle.
What are the demographics for movie attendance?
You know, I think that they probably skew older, you know, but it's weird because I think it's probably younger and older, right? People who are still going to the movies
Well, it used to be a cheap date.
Yeah, it's not a cheap date anymore.
No, it's not.
I like to go on Tuesdays when it's half price.
what does a movie cost these days? It's been years since I've been.
14 bucks sometimes.
Really?
Yeah.
So it used to be like $5.
I like to go on Tuesdays when it's $6. But
that's still high.
What?
$6 is still high.
$6 is still high. Yeah. I mean, what happened to you'll laugh, you'll cry, you'll kiss $3 goodbye is really what it should be. I think that it's interesting they're talking about people not going to the movies. I think if it was cheaper, honestly, I feel like a lot of people would go. I feel like it, you know, it's just to get away from everything. You know, I always give this speech at the before we show a movie. It's like, you don't have to turn off your cell phones. You get to turn off your cell phones. You get to be away from the internet for 2 hours and have a vacation.
That's right. Just put it away.
Let that stuff go.
A lot of people still send text messages for movies.
I don't get it. You know, I feel
put it away.
It's like, I'm sorry I couldn't answer your call. I was watching a movie. Excuse.
Next up, Victor's with us, Sulphur Springs, Texas, east of the Rockies. Hi, Victor.
Hi, George. Hello, Mr. Lobo. Up in the Northwest when I was a kid, Channel 7, CBS, it was the Cairo Count.
The Cairo Count. Tell me all about it.
Who was the host? Do you remember?
I don't remember his name, but he was like the CEO of that CBS affiliate up there.
He was the CEO, and then he put on the Dracula cape and hosted the movies?
I love it.
Yeah, but I got another question.
Sure.
I have a relative, and I'm sure you'll probably figure him out. And he was in the B-horror movies, and I can't remember his name, but
okay.
He starred as the sheriff in Where the Red Fern Grows.
Was that the name of the movie?
He was in several others. But
that was the name of the movie, Where the Red Fern Grows. I can't remember who the sheriff was in that right now.
Okay. Yeah,
I've heard
the sheriff interrupt the kids from trying to steal that kid's dogs.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm vaguely, I remember watching.
Lonnie Chapman was the name of the sheriff.
Thank you for that. Thank your staff for that.
Hey, I did it on my own.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
All right. Well, then I thank you, George. You're always on top of it.
Victor, that's the name of your relative.
All right. Well, thank you, guys.
Lonnie Chapman. There you go.
Lonnie Chapman, the great Lonnie Chapman as the sheriff in Where the Red Fern Grows.
I do have a great staff, by the way, Mr. Lobo, and they have on many occasions talked to me quickly in my ear, but in this case, I got that on my own.
The best. Whenever I'm talking, when it's Tom or Stephanie or Lisa, I always feel like I'm in excellent hands. Your staff is the best.
Speaking of Tom's, here's Thomas in La Jolla, California. Hi, Thomas.
George, thank you for taking my call. I remember here in California, there was science fiction theater. And I'm not sure who the host was, but
I think George can answer that. That was his favorite show.
Yeah, he was always very creepy. I mean, it was just...
Oh, there was a host, so there was a different science fiction theater then.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
The question I had for you, Mr. Lobo.
Yes.
There is a director in Canada who has a cult following. His
yes.
name is David Cronenberg.
He's oh, absolutely.
He's done movies like
sure.
Scanners, Videodrome with
yes.
Deborah Harry and James Woods, The Fly with Jeff Goldblum.
Absolutely.
And
he
does
what's
a
called
horror,
body horror
that creeps up on you. You know, it's like
yeah.
in the middle of the movie you realize, oh, my goodness, you know, this is getting serious.
All of his movies, again, seem to fall into what's called body horror, where it's things that are happening to us physically, and it's a little scary with that. And I think especially in the 80s with AIDS and everything that was happening with that, I think it really played on our fears of getting sick or something happening to us or somebody doing something to us. And all of his films seem to have this kind of underlying creepiness of it, something happening to your body. If Scanners has that, Shiver, which is another one of his, has that. The Fly, of course, he completely mutates into the fly, and it's very graphic. But Cronenberg is definitely an artist, certainly. I mean, nobody makes a movie like that guy. And you know, even though they're disturbing, They're always very well acted and well made.
Tom, here's a little trivia question for you, Thomas. What was the name of the fly in the movie?
Oh my goodness, that's a good question. Yeah,
I think I got that one.
Give it a shot, Mr. Lobo.
Seth Brundle.
The Brundle fly.
Yeah,
that's
Brundle
right.
Fly. Seth Brundle. He became Brundle fly.
Exactly. Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it. And of course, in the original Fly movie, wasn't that a black and white?
The Return of the Fly was black and white, which doesn't make any sense because the original Fly was in color. The first one was in color, and the second.
Which
one
movie
was
did the guy? He was a little fly, but you could hear him go, "Help me! Help me!
Help me! Help me!"
Yeah, that was the Fly, original Fly.
The original one. I'll always remember that.
Yeah,
next
absolutely.
Up, Lonnie's with us, Long Beach, California. Hey, Lonnie, take it away.
Hey there. What's up? Hi, George. It's good to hear you again.
Hey.
Real fun fact, my name is Lonnie, and my parents actually got the name from Lonnie Chapman, so there's that.
There you go.
Oh, wow.
Small world.
But,
better than Lonnie Anderson.
Yeah, but I heard that a lot.
Nothing's better than Lonnie Anderson.
Well, it would be if that was his name.
That's true. But I wanted to bring up the old horror hosts. I grew up in the Midwest, and I remember in the 70s, we had a gentleman named Dr. Sanguinary.
Oh, he
would
great.
Come out
sure.
in a bloody
Omaha,
bloody
right?
lab
Omaha,
coat.
Nebraska.
Yeah, Omaha, Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Sanguinary.
Yep.
And then after he retired in the 80s, we got a lady called Macabre.
Macabre. Wonderful.
Yeah, she was very
a lot of ladies in the 80s. After Elvira, I feel like there was another push for lady horror hosts, including Misty Brew and a whole
yeah.
bunch of others.
But yeah, I spent many teenage nights up late watching Macabre and some.
I'm sure.
Some
yep.
great, good, bad horror movies.
Wonderful. But, thank you for sharing Macabre with us. I'm not sure if I've heard of Macabre before.
I like that name.
Yeah, it's great.
Vincent Price. He was a great horror-type actor, wasn't
Absolutely.
He?
Absolutely. One of the best.
He from St. Louis. And he was great in Edward Scissorhands as the scientist professor.
Yep. Absolutely. He hosted Mystery, that show on PBS for years. Of course, so many movies. Hundreds of movies. Mask of the Red Death, Fall of the House of Usher, Return of the Invisible Man, which he carried that movie with his spectacular voice. So many. Last Man on Earth. I mean, Vincent Price was just one of the best horror actors. And what's interesting, like a lot of these guys, is he thought he was coming to the end of his career as an older gentleman, but really that was the beginning of his career. And he gave us he was much more effective as an older actor than he was as a younger
he
actor.
Was in Thriller with Michael Jackson
yeah
in
he
that
not
video
paid no money for that was a cashless deal there. He did the voice for Vincent Price Vincent Price did the breakdown in the middle of the song where darkness falls across the land. The midnight hour is close at hand. Creatures crawl in search of blood to terrorize your neighborhood. He did that whole breakdown in the middle. And they used it in the Michael Jackson song. And then as his payment, he got a giant life-size painting of Michael Jackson in his, regalia.
And didn't they give him a choice to see if he wanted a little commission of the total take? And he elected not to take it.
What I heard from David Del Valle is he did it as a favor and that he got a painting as a bonus. And then his wife is like, we got to get rid of this painting. And Vincent Price is like, oh no, he'll know. So they just had a giant painting of Vincent Price in their house somewhere.
And he worked right up until he died, didn't he?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think Edward Scissorhands was his last. And I think he worked right up until he died. He loved to work. And I think that, if you can spend your whole life doing something that you love and people appreciate, why not?
Wasn't he in the original House on the Haunted Hill?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
he was the mastermind, and he was the one who invited everyone to the House on Haunted Hill and promptly got them all drunk and gave them guns, because that's what you do when you've got ghosts.
Next up, let's go to Johnny in Augusta, Georgia, before the break. Welcome to the show, Johnny. Go ahead.
Yes. Hey, this is Johnny in Augusta. Good to talk to you, George.
You too, sir.
Thank you, Johnny.
Yeah, I was going to tell you this. You probably could have told the story better in your own words, but we had a count just insane that was our local
just insane. That's nice.
Yes.
I like it.
Yeah, it was good.
Always the puns with the horror host, right? They always have the punny names.
He had the name, but in the somewhat, hate to end on this Michael Jackson note, but he had the demise years later, about 10 years ago, matter of fact, where getting convicted for,
Yeah, exactly. You're breaking up a little bit at the end.
Okay, you're saying that he was a pedophilia. Is that where we're going with this?
I was not going there.
Okay, good.
San Francisco, in San Diego, they had a show called Disaster Piece Theater. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do remember that vaguely.
They did skits and everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, I always watched Creature Features with Bob Wilkins, but yeah, there were a lot of other ones going on. I forgot the one with Asmodeus, but he was another Bay Area horror host. And there was Whitey Gleason, who hosted Fright Night Theater. There's just a ton of them.
I love these names they came up with for everything.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, a lot of them have great punny names like M.T. Graves and stuff like that.
Blobfest is not a bad name either.
Blobfest is the best. It's our 20th anniversary, and of course, the meteorite fell to Earth in 1958, and the ooze came out, and of course, at the end of the movie, they freeze it, right? They send it to the Antarctic, and I love the line at the end of the movie, which always gets a laugh today, which is, we'll be safe as long as the Arctic stays cold.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to be back with Final Calls with Mr. Lobo on Coast to Coast AM. And we're back with Mr. Lobo. What'd you think of the Twilight Zone series, Mr. Lobo, the originals?
The original Twilight Zone, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, I think that they never get old. The rewatchability is incredible. I watch those episodes over and over and over again. And they never get old. And Rod Serling, his stuff was so sharp, and
genius.
He was just such a keen observer of human nature, and a great host. I mean, Rod Serling's kind of a horror host, really.
Yeah, he was, the way he'd come out and everything else. Indeed, but it wasn't all horror flicks.
No, it was all imagination. That was really what the Twilight Zone.
They had messages behind every show.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think it was a great way to use fantasy as a metaphor for the human condition.
What about the Alfred Hitchcock Mystery Theater? Remember that one?
Alfred Hitchcock Presents was good, too. Outer Limits was good, too. Twilight Zone was better, but I think Alfred Hitchcock was great, too, and he was like, his presentation was very horror host-like. I loved when he was talking about his headache remedy and that could be taken in a tiny capsule, and then he just starts putting bullets on the desk in front of him. I mean, it's hilarious.
What about Science Fiction Theater. Remember that?
Science, of course, Science Fiction, which did not have a host.
No, it did not. It just started, didn't it?
It just started, but a great
there was
anthology,
a voice.
A wonderful anthology show.
How come those shows don't work anymore?
Anthologies are tough because, again, it's every week it's a different show. And I think that, I think now all the shows are soap operas because that's the way they keep people.
They continue ready. From one to the next, like
yeah, exactly.
Breaking Bad and all that. Yeah,
yeah. So I think this new Twilight Zone, it will be, they're doing a new Tales from the Crypt and a new Twilight Zone. So hopefully, we're coming back to being able to do that. But you have to have an audience. Oh, Black Mirror is a good modern
yeah, what do you think of that?
Show.
You like
That's
it?
A great, yeah, I like it. I'm not always in the mood for it because it's so dark. It's like, yeah, I get it. Technology is terrible and it's making us horrible. But, I don't know if I want to hear that story every week. But they had a choose-your-own-adventure one that was really kind of interesting called Bandersnatch. There was one where there was a guy who was putting himself into a Star Trek type show, using technology to kind of live out his fantasies and a lot of kind of things that really strike home with today's generation. And I think a lot of those stories, like the Twilight Zone, have something important to say about where we're at socially and everywhere, and as humans.
We're packed with calls, so let's go to them. Greg in Tampa, Florida. Hey, Greg, go ahead, sir.
All right. Yes, I have a couple of movies that I remember as a child. The original 13 Ghosts.
13, also William Castle, 13 Ghosts. You'd have the ghost viewer. If you looked into if you looked in the red one, it meant you believed in ghosts. And you looked in the blue lens, it meant that you didn't believe in ghosts, something like that. But you didn't see
it. Yeah, it was like a 3D thing. And they had the lion tamer that the lion finally bit his head off. And
oh, jeez.
Huh. And then they had at the end of the movie, the child, the little boy, was being predated upon, and the way that he got rid of his adult adversary was there was like a bed that came down and suffocated him at the end of the movie.
Right, right. What I want to know is who would want to watch that movie
put
with the
man
lens?
In the bed
would
like
not
they
want to see the ghost. That's
the
what I want to know.
Pardon me.
I would want to know who would want to watch the movie with the lens that hides all the ghosts. I would think that everyone would want to watch it with the lens that allows you to see the ghosts.
Well, yeah, but back then I just had a black and white TV.
Oh, sure.
And then the other one I liked, of course, was The House of Wax, where the heroine, the young girl, she was finally supposedly being, have hot wax, boiling hot wax poured over her, and her young man.
Was also a big 3D movie, also.
Which one was that, Mr. Lobo?
House of Wax was the first 3D movie, as far as I know.
Did they still do 3D?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. IMAX has a lot of major blockbusters are all simultaneously created in 3D. It's not the red-blue 3D. It's not the anaglyph 3D. It's the polarized 3D.
Let's go to Cleveland, Ohio. Sandra's with us, east of the Rockies. Hello, Sandra.
Hello. Hello. How many times I've tried to call. This is absolutely wonderful.
Well, you got through this time.
We're so glad that you're here.
I wondered if you knew at all in your radio travels a man named Bill Cardill from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Oh, Chili Billy Cardilli? Absolutely.
Yeah. He was
one of the great horror hosts in Pittsburgh. He of course did radio for years after his television days, and he is also forever immortalized in Night of the Living Dead as a television one of the guys going around with the posse at the very end of the movie. He is involved with that as a television reporter. So he actually has a role in one of the most famous horror movies of all time. But the reason they put him in that movie is because he was their horror host, and they grew up watching him.
Did you know him, Sandra?
Only through the TV. You felt like you knew him.
You grew up with him, didn't you?
Pardon me?
You grew up watching him, huh?
Exactly, yeah. And it was like, thank goodness my sister and I had a one bed to sleep in.
I'd love it.
Well, he was one of the normal guys. He did not dress up like a vampire or a ghoul or anything like that. He was usually like in a tuxedo or a turtleneck, but he did show the horror movies, and he was very quick on his feet, very 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 funny, naturally funny.
And my pal, of course, Morgus, who originated in New Orleans, they ended up hiring him in Detroit. And I'd come running home from school every day, Mr. Lobo, just to watch him, because he would do these zany little weather bits around some kind of science project.
Oh, wow.
And everything always went wrong. Everything went wrong with his science things.
I feel so bad for Morgus. When is he going to get an experiment that actually
works?
Off?
I know it. He came in the studio here a couple of years ago. My staff flew him here for the holidays.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And he wanted me to conduct...
When is your staff going to fly Mr. Lobo?
Well, they might do that, but Morgus wanted me to do an experiment with him.
Yes.
And he said that he had developed a force field that he could put around himself. So he told me to smack him in the mouth. And I said, I am not going to hit you in the mouth, Morgus. And he said, George, it'll work. It'll work.
George, it'll work. Yeah.
So, so he put this force field around him. Of course, you can't see it.
Yes.
And he said, now hit me. Hit me right here in the mouth. And I knocked out his tooth.
Oh, wow. That guy is amazing. He is absolutely amazing. What a treasure. One of the all-time great horror hosts.
Absolutely. Tracy's with us, truck driving in Mississippi. Hi, Trace. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Actually, your previous caller beat me to it, Chili Billy.
That was it?
The previous caller beat me to Chili Billy.
He was huge. Yeah. He was huge. People loved him.
Oh, he was. I have an autographed picture of him.
Every time I do Monster Bash in Pittsburgh, which is the big convention there in Butler, or sometimes it's in Mars, Pennsylvania, but in that area near Pittsburgh, every single person comes up to me and says, oh, okay, you're doing a Chili Billy Cardilli.
Wow. Yeah, absolutely. Is he still alive or is he gone now?
No, he's passed. But, you know, he used to do all those conventions. Up until the year he passed, he was at all those shows, signing autographs, shaking hands, you know, really very, very good to his fans, had a smile and a joke for every single fan, and kept his energy up well into his later years.
In most of those days, they didn't have the capability of videotaping.
No.
Now, what they used to do is they used to do something called a kinescope, which they take a picture of a picture.
Right. It would be a video camera shooting, a film camera shooting a video image and then recording it onto film.
Yeah, it's too bad we lost some great things.
Videotape was too expensive, so a lot of those shows do not exist. I think there's maybe just a few minutes of Vampira, a few minutes of Goulardi. A lot of those shows, even Bob Wilkins, who was in the 70s, who was my horror host, you know, they only have like a handful of complete shows. Most of that stuff got your bulk erased.
Do you remember Soupy Sales? Now, he wasn't a horror host, but he started in Detroit, did a show there, got picked up by ABC, went to Los Angeles, and then became a superstar.
He was very influential to horror hosts, though. I think the kids show hosts were very influential to horror hosts. I think it's a very similar line of work. Sven Gulli, who's really popular right now out of Chicago, he does a lot of bits that are right out of Soupy Sales, where you've got like he's talking to like a gesticulating hand of a person that you don't see. That's very Soupy Sales.
And, you know, he used to host between Jack Parr and Johnny Carson, he'd do the Tonight Show once in a while.
Oh, really?
He'd fill in. I never knew that.
Great to see. I would have loved to see him do the Tonight Show.
He was a funny guy. He had great characters.
Fast and funny.
Very, very quick. Yep.
Good improv.
Mark in Lincoln, Nebraska is with us now. Go ahead, Mark.
Hey.
Hi.
Hey, George.
Greetings, Mark.
Hey. Yeah, been trying a long time ago. Gave up for a while. Finally got through.
Paid off.
Yeah. One of the guys beat me to it, but I met him and I got his autograph in Lincoln, Dr. Sanguinary.
And, Omaha, Nebraska, Dr. Sanguinary, absolutely.
Yeah.
And there is another generation of Dr. Sanguinary, not the same person, but some of that character still continues today.
Yeah, I got his autograph and a picture and stuff when I was a little kid. And I remember Macabre, and there was a couple other ones. I can't remember their names a long time ago after that. But and then a couple of the movies I remember that are classics. One of them was called Blood Relations. Do you remember that?
I don't. Blood Relations. Tell me more.
I have the VHS. I seen it one time, and then I took me a long time to find a VHS, but I can't think of the guy's name, but I think he's gone by now, but he was in the same era as Vincent Price. He was the guy, he had a mustache, and he was on a lot of the old creepy classic horror movies. I think he was on the House of Wax too, maybe, or something. He was an older guy.
Okay.
But he was the dad. And his son brought home his fiance, a real, real pretty girl. And his dad was jealous or something. And his wife was dying of something too, I think brain cancer. So it was kind of weird because.
And this was his son who brought home the girl, right?
Right. And so after, basically at the end of the movie, then you found out what was the plan, but they had a plan, I guess. And later on, you found out the son was sort of in on the plan too. And during the movie, then his dad sort of had like a thing with his girlfriend. And then at the end of the movie, it showed what they planned on doing. They like strapped her into a chair in the basement. And the son was like, telling her something weird, and her father came down there, and he was wearing like his doctor's outfit, and then it showed the
whacked out family.
Then it showed the guy's wife that was dying, and they figured out what was going on. They were gonna like put her brain in the wife's.
Oh, they're the old harvesting the organs routine
and flip the old brain into the other body, huh? Strange stuff in those days. How would you categorize, Mr. Lobo, Silence of the Lambs?
Well, a lot of people like to categorize it as a thriller because I categorize thrillers are horror movies that aren't scary. But I would say, I would always call it a horror film, or definitely had horror aspects. And I remember when it was up for an Oscar, that was very exciting because horror movies never get recognized. So I like to claim it as a horror movie, but it's a great film, and Hannibal Lecter is certainly memorable as a horror villain.
Anthony Hopkins, great actor, isn't he?
Yeah, absolutely.
He's one of the best. Kathy in Windsor, Windsor, California. Where are you, Kathy?
Yes, up in Sonoma County.
Okay, cool. Okay.
First time caller, George. I'm surprised you got through.
Good to have you here.
I grew up outside of Detroit, 1951.
That's my hometown.
Yep, and I've got Morgus and Twilight Zone and Soupy. They were great. Do you remember Poop Deck Paul?
I sure did. Movies? Yep.
Poop Deck Paul, is that like a cartoon host?
He was a host for the Popeyes, for the Popeye cartoons.
Yeah, Captain Mitch. He was our cartoon host. Always a sailor. They're always sailors, right, who show these the crummy Popeye cartoons.
With pipes.
In the mornings and the afternoons.
With those corn cob pipes.
Yeah.
Well, the movie that freaked me out was Psycho. As a kid, I couldn't take a shower alone in the house for years.
It was a classic. It was one of Hitchcock's best. We're almost out of time, Mr. Lobo. How can people watch you and get a hold of you?
Oh, my gosh. This is so sad. I can't believe this. Well, please come find me, Mr. Lobo. I've got a Mr. Lobo Facebook. Please watch me on your Roku. Download my channel, OSI74. Come see me at convention, see me at Blobfest, listen to me on Coast to Coast AM.
Oh, that's right. You're one of our favorites.
Well, you're one of my favorites, George. I really, really appreciate what you do. You're one of the all-time great broadcasters, and it's certainly an honor to be able to just have fun and talk about movies.
I love it. And on a Friday night, it's just superb. Mr. Lobo with us up next. Here we go. Open lines.